Welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today, you've brought us some source material that tackles, well, a truly audacious idea, something called the psychedelic evolution hypothesis.
That's right. It's a hypothesis that moves beyond just looking at psychoactive substances for, you know, therapy or recreation,
right,
and asks if they might have played a more fundamental role, maybe even shaping human consciousness itself.
Okay, wow. And this pulls together findings from archaeology, neuroscience, genetics, anthropology, evolutionary biology. Quite the mix.
It does. It's a framework paper trying to synthesize evidence from all these fields.
So our mission in this deep dive is to really unpack this idea that these substances weren't just, you know, used by early humans, but potentially acted as a catalyst.
Exactly. A catalyst that might have accelerated the evolution of our consciousness, our cognitive abilities, maybe pushing it beyond a slower, more gradual pace.
Could they be part of the reason why human development seems to have made these huge, rapid leaps? Is that the question?
That's the core question this hypothesis is trying to get at.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It sounds like a wild concept, honestly. But the source apparently lays out convergent evidence across these different fields.
It does. It pulls threads together.
Okay, so let's dive into that evidence then and just see where it takes us.
Sounds good. Let's start with the most tangible stuff, the archaeology. I mean, do we actually have solid proof that early humans were even interacting with these substances?
Yeah, that seems like the essential starting point, doesn't it? And the archaeological record, well, surprisingly, it does offer some concrete findings in different parts of the world, too.
Indeed. There's direct material proof. For instance, our findings like actual peyote buttons in ancient Neolithic sites in Texas.
Peyote buttons, really?
Yeah, thousands of years old, still containing the psychoactive alkaloids, which suggests, you know, intentional use, maybe even organized use way back then.
Organized use?
Yeah.
So not just someone accidentally chewing on a weird cactus.
Exactly. And it's not isolated. What else?
Well, what else has turned up?
In South America, for example, they found cocaine metabolites in ancient Andean mummies, which shows pretty sophisticated knowledge and use of coca plants going back millennia in those cultures.
Okay.
And then if you jump over to Europe, there's chemical residue found in a beaker tomb in Spain from around 2500 BC. It points towards possible psychoactive additives in drinks, maybe like wheat beer.
So evidence across continents then, North America, South America, Europe, suggesting it wasn't just accidental ingestion, but deliberate preparation and use.
Precisely. And the source mentions a study, I think, from 2019 that helped categorize this evidence systematically.
How so?
Well, they look for direct proof, like finding the actual plant material or analyzing chemical residues on tools or pots, maybe even genetic analysis of ancient plant bits.
Right. The smoking gun, so to speak.
Kind of. And then there's the indirect stuff, where you don't find the substance itself, but, you know, other clues.
Like what kind of clues?
Things like art or iconography that seems to depict altered states of consciousness, or finding specialized gear, tools designed specifically for preparing or consuming these substances.
Oh, okay.
Or just finding these items within ritual contexts, places where it strongly implies their use was for, well, mind alteration.
Now, one thing the source highlights, which sounds really striking, is this geographic overlap.
Yes.
You look at where the archaeological evidence for early psychoactive plant use is concentrated cannabis in Central Asia, ayahuasca tools in South America, mushroom iconography in Europe, peyote in North America.
Right.
And the source notes these places often align with what are considered early human development hotspots.
That overlap is fascinating. I mean, it's not definitive proof of causation, obviously.
Of course not. Correlation isn't causation.
Exactly. But it does lend a certain plausibility to the hypothesis, doesn't it? It shows these substances were available and they were being used in regions and during times when significant human cognitive and cultural leaps were happening.
Okay, so we know early humans were using them. That seems pretty clear.
Yeah.
Now, how does this connect to the evolution part? Specifically the timelines, the timelines of human brain development.
Right. And this is where the hypothesis really starts to get, well, interesting. Because human brain evolution hasn't been this smooth, steady climb.
No.
No. There are periods of surprisingly rapid change that really stand out.
Like what kind of changes? And when are we talking?
Okay, so around 300,000 years ago, the sheer size of the human brain reached modern ranges. The source calls this a dramatic acceleration.
Dramatic acceleration.
Yeah. And even more striking, it points out that around 200,000 years ago, brain size actually doubled compared to earlier hominids.
Doubled. That sounds enormous, not just a gradual tweak.
It is a huge jump. And critically, the source notes this rapid increase happened without a really clear conventional evolutionary explanation, you know, not solely based on environmental pressures as we usually think about them.
Right.
Then later on, between about 100,000 and 35,000 years ago, there were significant changes, not just in size, but in the actual shape of the brain.
Shape changes.
Yeah, particularly in the cortical regions, the areas linked to higher cognitive functions, complex thought, abstract reasoning, planning, that kind of thing.
This rapid change, without an obvious external pressure, this is exactly where some people might have heard of the stoned ape theory, isn't it? Terence McKenna's idea.
Yes, exactly. The source does mention Terence McKenna's theory. It proposed a direct link between psilocybin mushrooms and this specific period of rapid human evolution.
Right. And it's important to say it's highly controversial, right? Debated scientifically.
Oh, absolutely. Its specific claims are not widely accepted in the scientific community. Very controversial.
Okay. But the source points out how McKenna's idea, the concept of psychedelics being linked somehow, does seem to align with some of these puzzling phenomena we see in the archaeological record during that critical time frame.
Precisely. The theory resonates, even if the specifics are debated. It resonates with the puzzling speed of things like that sudden brain size increase.
Right.
The remarkably rapid development of complex language, which seems to appear relatively quickly. The emergence of symbolic thought, art, more sophisticated tools, all showing up in the record without this long, slow, gradual transition beforehand.
So the hypothesis we're discussing today suggests psychedelics could be a potential external factor, mm-hmm. something that fits the pattern of these rapid leaps.
Yes.
Does this fit with the idea of punctuated equilibrium in evolution?
It does, yeah. Punctuated equilibrium, the idea of long periods of stability punctuated by these short, intense bursts of rapid change.
Yeah.
Human brain evolution seems to show that pattern, especially when you compare it to the slower development in other primates, which points to the possibility that something other than just slow, gradual pressure was at play. Maybe a catalyst.
A catalyst.
The source also mentions potential links to things like genetic bottlenecks in the human population, times when small populations might have been more susceptible to rapid changes, and just how complex behaviors seem to appear quite abruptly in the record.
Okay, so we've got the archaeological evidence showing use, this correlation with puzzling rapid evolutionary periods, and the question of needing a catalyst. How could that even work, though? On a biological level, what in our brains could possibly make this plausible?
Right. This moves us into the neurogenetic foundations, and the source points to a really key biological player, the serotonin 2A receptor, the 5-HT2A receptor.
Yes. That's the main target for many classic psychedelics, isn't it? Like psilocybin, LSD.
It is, yeah. That's the primary site of action. And the source highlights some critical features of this receptor that make it really relevant here.
Like what?
Well, first, it's anciently conserved, meaning it's found across a huge range of species, from insects all the way up to humans.
This is not new, it's fundamental.
Exactly. Suggests it plays a really basic, evolutionarily old role in brain function. Second, and this is crucial, in humans, it has particularly high expression levels in our cortical regions.
The cortex, the outer wrinkly layer.
Yep. Especially in the areas responsible for our higher cognitive functions. The parts we associate with abstract thought, planning, self-awareness, our unique human consciousness.
So, wait. The main biological target for these substances is concentrated right in the parts of the brain that seem to make us uniquely human. That feels significant.
It really does seem significant.
Yeah.
And the source notes there are studies suggesting that activity in this 5-HT2A receptor system actually contributed to evolutionary brain growth, specifically in those consciousness-linked areas of the neocortex.
Wow. Okay. What about brain networks? I've heard psychedelics mentioned a lot in relation to the default mode network.
Ah, the default mode network, or DMN. Yes, that's absolutely central to how we currently understand consciousness.
Right. That's the network that's active when our minds are wandering, when we're thinking about ourselves, the past, the future.
Exactly. It's fundamental to our sense of self-awareness, introspection.
And its complex development seems tied to the recent expansion of our prefrontal cortex, the very human part of the brain.
Correct. It's a relatively recent evolutionary development in its complexity. And what do psychedelics do?
They disrupt it.
They're known to significantly, though temporarily, disrupt the activity within the DMN. And this disruption leads to those altered states of consciousness, but also, crucially, it seems to enhance cognitive flexibility.
Flexibility.
Right.
Like helping us break out of rigid thought patterns.
Precisely. Getting unstuck. The source also points to studies showing enhanced connectivity within and between DMN regions during psychedelic experiences, which could potentially improve things like pattern recognition.
Enhanced pattern recognition and breaking rigid thinking. I mean, those sound like incredibly powerful advantages for a species needing to adapt and invent rapidly.
They could very well be, couldn't they? The source also briefly touches on genetic variations and epigenetics.
Okay.
It notes that variations in the gene that codes for that 5-HT2A receptor can influence things like how we process novelty in the hippocampus, or even individual differences in pattern recognition abilities.
So maybe some individuals back then were biologically more attuned to the effects, more sensitive.
Potentially, yes. That's plausible. And modern studies looking at current effects show psychedelics can actually influence gene expression, especially genes related to neuroplasticity, the brain's ability to change and form new connections.
Oh, epigenetics, changing how genes are read, not the genes themselves.
Exactly. Now, applying this back to ancient humans is speculative, of course.
Sure.
But the source mentions the potential for these epigenetic changes to have had some form of transgenerational influence, maybe linking genes associated with cognitive enhancement to psychedelic receptor sensitivity over time.
That's a wild idea. That interacting with these substances might not just change the individual, but could potentially influence the cognitive path of subsequent generations.
It adds another layer of biological plausibility, doesn't it? For how a catalytic effect could have ripple effects over evolutionary time. Even if, as I said, this part is highly speculative based on extrapolating from modern findings.
Okay, so we have the archaeology showing they were used, the evolutionary timing puzzle suggesting something accelerated development, and some plausible neurobiology involving key receptors and networks. But was this just like a one-off event somewhere? Or do we see similar patterns across different human cultures suggesting something more universal is going on?
This is where the cross-cultural convergence evidence comes in. And it's actually a pretty strong piece of the puzzle supporting the hypothesis's broader relevance.
Also,
the independent development of shamanic traditions, traditions centered around psychoactive use, popping up in geographically isolated cultures all over the world. That's remarkable.
They figured the stuff out totally separately, without talking to each other.
Absolutely. Think about the deep historical use of ayahuasca by various indigenous groups in South America, or the central role of peyote in many Native American spiritual practices, or even the use of fly agaric mushrooms in ancient Siberian traditions.
Right, different continents, different plants.
Different plants, different cultures. These traditions weren't learned from each other. They seem to have arisen independently. Yet they all involve using psychoactives for similar purposes. Accessing altered states, gaining spiritual insights, enhancing perception.
And it's not just the traditions, it's the plants themselves too, right? You mentioned different plants, but sometimes cultures found similar plants with similar effects.
Exactly. The ethnobotanical patterns are also striking. The independent discovery and use of similar types of psychoactive plants across continents. Think cannabis, psilocybin mushrooms, various plants containing DMT, even the almost universal discovery of alcohol fermentation.
It suggests a deep, maybe fundamental, human tendency or capacity to seek out and utilize substances that alter consciousness.
It really does. It suggests this wasn't just some random accident, but maybe something more ingrained.
The source also mentions mythological and linguistic clues, like stories or language patterns.
Yeah, things like cross-cultural stories or myths about gods or spirits gaining wisdom or power from consuming certain substances. And shared linguistic concepts for altered states, phrases like mind's eye or inner vision appearing in different language families.
Similar frameworks for understanding consciousness expansion.
It suggests a potentially common human experience and interpretation of these states, maybe pointing to really deep historical roots for exploring consciousness with, well, plant allies as a way to access knowledge or insight.
Okay, let's bring this right up to the present day then. What does modern neuroscience tell us about how psychedelics affect the brain and cognition now? Can current research actually validate the idea that these substances could enhance cognition or foster brain changes in ways that are relevant to this whole evolutionary hypothesis?
Modern neuroscience is definitely providing incredibly detailed insights. And yes, some findings certainly lend weight to the plausibility of the kinds of effects the hypothesis suggests might have happened anciently. A key area is neuroplasticity enhancement.
Neuroplasticity. The brain's ability to change and adapt itself.
Precisely. Studies with psilocybin, for example, literally show it can increase dendritic spine density.
Dendritic spines?
Yeah, the tiny connection points between neurons. More spines, potentially more connections. This is a physical basis for enhanced synaptic plasticity, which underlies learning, memory, adaptation.
It's like physically building more potential pathways in the brain.
That's a good way to think about it.
Mm.
There's also evidence from brain imaging showing increased connectivity between different brain regions during and after psychedelic experiences.
So parts of the brain talking to each other more.
Or talking to each other differently, improving communication and potentially overall cognitive flexibility. And the source mentions some research suggesting psychedelics might even promote neurogenesis, the formation of new neurons.
New brain cells.
Particularly in areas vital for learning and memory, like the hippocampus. Though the extent and significance of adult neurogenesis is still an active area of research.
Still, these are profound potential effects rewiring the brain, maybe even generating new cells. What about direct cognitive effects that research has actually confirmed?
Right. Modern studies are validating effects that align quite well with the kinds of cognitive leaps the hypothesis talks about. We're seeing evidence for enhanced pattern recognition,
okay,
improvements in creative problem-solving abilities, increased cognitive flexibility, that ability to shift perspectives, think outside the box, be less rigid.
Less rigid thinking.
Yeah. And even enhanced memory consolidation, especially for experiences that have significant emotional weight.
Those abilities, pattern recognition, creativity, flexibility, better memory, they sound incredibly useful for early humans facing novel environments, new challenges, needing to innovate.
Absolutely. They sound like tools for adaptation. The source highlights how psychedelics seem to temporarily disrupt these entrenched networks, like the DMN we talked about.
Right, loosening things up.
Exactly, allowing for greater communication between brain regions that usually operate more separately. And there's an intriguing idea that this might effectively reopen neuroplasticity windows.
Reopen windows.
Like potentially making the adult brain temporarily more malleable, more open to learning and change, similar to critical periods in early development when the brain is super adaptable.
So it's like temporarily hitting a reset button on some of our ingrained mental habits or software, allowing the brain to explore new configurations and process information in novel ways.
That temporary disruption, followed by potential reorganization, seems to be a key mechanism modern science is uncovering. It allows for novelty.
Stepping back a bit then, if we entertain this hypothesis, even just explore it, what does it imply about the very nature of consciousness itself, how we think about it?
Well, it definitely pushes us to think differently about how consciousness evolved.
Mm.
The source notes that consciousness isn't likely unique to humans, right? It seems to be an emergent property.
Emergent property.
Yeah, something that arises from biological systems when they reach a certain level of neural complexity. We see precursors or forms of it across species.
So it's not just a human thing, but something that arises from complex information processing in a nervous system.
That's the general view the source seems to lean towards. But when we look specifically at the human story, that hypothesis isn't claiming psychedelics just magically created consciousness out of thin air.
Right. You said they were catalysts, not the origin point.
Exactly. The idea is they likely acted as catalysts, accelerating existing biological potentials, speeding up evolutionary tendencies that were maybe already underway.
How would that work?
Well, one idea is that consciousness might emerge more fully when neural complexity hits a certain threshold. And the hypothesis suggests psychedelics could have potentially lowered that threshold for our ancestors.
Lower the threshold.
Yeah, perhaps by enhancing connectivity or plasticity, allowing our ancestors to reach higher states of cognitive function, self-awareness, symbolic thought more rapidly than typical evolutionary timescales might predict based only on gradual genetic changes.
Okay. So that catalytic model provides a potential explanation for the speed of that seemingly sudden burst of complex consciousness we see in the archaeological record. It helps bridge the gap between having a complex brain and the rapid emergence of complex human behavior.
Precisely. It gives us a framework, a potential mechanism, to rigorously investigate how that acceleration might have actually happened biologically and culturally.
So this isn't just a historical thought experiment, then. It has implications for future research. Where does the research need to go next to actually test this hypothesis, to move it from just a compelling idea towards something potentially more concrete?
Yeah, the source outlines several crucial research priorities. High on the list is simply more systematic archaeological examination.
More digging.
More digging, but also using the latest advanced chemical analysis techniques on existing and new finds. We need to look at known early human sites with a much finer comb, specifically searching for direct chemical evidence of substance use on tools, pottery, remains, etc.
Okay, applying cutting-edge science to the dirt, basically.
Exactly. Also, more genetic studies, specifically looking at the evolution of these key receptor systems, like the 5-HT2A receptor, and trying to correlate genetic changes in those systems with key milestones in human cognitive evolution.
Connecting the genes to the timeline.
Right. And building a truly comprehensive cross-cultural database of ethnobotanical practices is also seen as vital. We need to systematically map these patterns globally and historically.
Understand the universal picture.
Yes. And, of course, continuing the controlled neuroplasticity studies using modern brain imaging like fMRI and PT scans to really map out precisely how psychedelics affect brain structure, function, and connectivity in ways relevant to complex cognition.
What about bigger goals further down the line?
Well, medium and long-term goals mentioned include things like developing standardized cognitive assessment protocols. We need better ways to measure changes in consciousness, creativity, flexibility, the very things the hypothesis focuses on.
Okay.
Also, using evolutionary modeling simulations, computer models to test the hypothesis's viability under different assumptions and scenarios. Conducting more detailed anthropological studies to understand the context of surviving traditional practices. Really mapping the specific neural mechanisms involved at a deeper biological level.
Getting down to the nitty-gritty.
Yeah. Painstakingly reconstructing detailed timelines that integrate all the available archaeological, genetic, and anthropological data. And ultimately, the hope is to translate any insights gained into modern therapeutic applications.
Right. Which brings us nicely to the implications. Let's say future research really starts to support this hypothesis. Why should someone listening right now care? What actually changes if this idea turns out to be largely correct?
Well, if the psychedelic evolution hypothesis or something like it is validated, it would be, well, revolutionary. It would fundamentally reshape our understanding of how human consciousness developed. It would force revisions to foundational models in several major fields.
Like what fields? And what's the practical impact? Could it change things in the real world?
Absolutely. In therapeutics, for instance, it could open up entirely new avenues. If we understand how these substances might have historically influenced brain development and cognition, it could inform how we design controlled psychedelic interventions today for conditions related to consciousness, cognition, maybe even certain mental health issues.
So learning from the past to inform future medicine.
Potentially. It could also offer profound insights for education, maybe understanding optimal conditions or methods for fostering cognitive development, creativity, flexible thinking.
Interesting.
And it would certainly lead to revised models in evolutionary biology and neuroscience. It could genuinely rewrite a significant chapter in the story of our species' origins, how we became, well, us.
It really changes the narrative of how we became human in a way.
Exactly. But even if the hypothesis isn't fully supported in the end, the source emphasizes the value of this whole research framework itself.
How so?
Well, just pursuing it demonstrates the power of interdisciplinary methods, getting archaeologists, geneticists, neuroscientists, anthropologists all talking and working together on a massive question. That's valuable in itself.
Right. Breaking down silos.
And the individual findings along the way, more data on brain evolution, clearer understanding of psychedelic effects on neuroplasticity, better maps of consciousness markers. All that knowledge still holds independent scientific value, regardless of the ultimate fate of the overarching hypothesis.
Sure.
Plus, by proposing a bold, testable idea, even if it turns out to be wrong, it helps future research. It narrows down the possibilities, helps focus efforts elsewhere. You learn by refuting ideas, too.
So the process of investigating it is valuable, no matter the final verdict.
Definitely. It fosters collaboration across disciplines. It contributes directly to humanity's biggest questions about consciousness. What is it? How did it get here? Where is it going? And it provides a kind of template for how we might tackle other really complex evolutionary puzzles in the future.
Okay, so to bring this all together then, the psychedelic evolution hypothesis. It's this compelling framework, this big idea. It suggests that psychoactive substances weren't just something ancient humans stumbled upon and used occasionally.
Right.
But that they potentially acted as a powerful catalyst. Something that significantly accelerated the development of our unique cognitive abilities, our consciousness, during crucial periods in our evolution.
It's a hypothesis, absolutely. A framework to guide future research. Not a proven fact, we should stress that. But it's one that seems to be backed by these fascinating convergent points of evidence from archaeology, genetics, neuroscience, anthropology.
Convergent evidence.
Yeah, suggesting it's at least a plausible explanation for the puzzling speed of some of those rapid human leaps in capability.
And the core idea that really sticks out is that catalytic role. Mm. Not creating consciousness from nothing, but providing a kind of evolutionary push or accelerant.
Yeah.
Helping explain those rapid changes, language, art, complex thought, that don't seem to fit quite so neatly into the standard models of slow, gradual, incremental change.
It offers a potential mechanism, a missing piece, perhaps, for that burst of transformation that made us human.
Wow. Well, this deep dive into how consciousness might have evolved, it really isn't just a look into the distant past, is it? The source suggests that understanding this potential historical link, this deep relationship, could actually offer profound insights. Insights into how we might enhance, repair, or maybe even optimize conscious experience right here, right now. What does that possibility make you think about?